Well, hello everyone and welcome back. Today is Friday, April 5th, 2013. My name is Angela Walton-Raji and this is the African Roots Podcast. Remember, you can always reach me at africanrootspodcast@gmail.com. Well, how is everyone? I hope you've had a good week. I hope spring has arrived where you live. It's arrived only, I'll guess, in a calendar way here in the Mid-Atlantic. You heard me say it last week. It's cold. Well, guess what? I'll say it again this week. It's cold. Anyway, what can we do? Hopefully this cold snap will finally melt away soon. It'll begin to warm up. Cherry blossoms are about to start just coming forth on all of the branches. Can't wait to go and see the cherry blossoms in Washington. Spring break is everywhere. Now I see why young folks go to the warmer climates. When I was in college, I either went home or stayed on my campus. It was never a big deal. But, of course, it's sort of a cultural phenomenon these days for younger people to go someplace fun, someplace warm. I can appreciate that sentiment because I'm certainly thinking about warmer weather. Anyway, hope you're doing well. Hope you've had a really good week. And by the way, if you're in the greater Washington, D.C. area, there's still time today and tomorrow to get over to the Marriott Fair Oaks in Fairfax, Virginia, over on Lee Jackson Highway. The Fairfax Genealogical Society Spring Conference is underway. A chance to hear presenters such as Makargo Sharbaugh, that we all know in this area as a very, very gifted researcher and person well-versed on Virginia history, and particularly the records coming out of Alexandria. But she is truly someone to listen to and learn a lot about. If you have not heard her, I think you'd be surprised that just the vast array of things that you can really, really glean from her. And my good friend, Pat Richley Erickson, many of us know her as Dear Myrtle, is also presenting. And again, an opportunity to hear, and by the way, I understand she's moving out of Virginia soon. Well, she's kept two residences, I guess, one in Virginia and one in Utah. Well, she's going to be going back to Utah, so this is a chance to hear her. She speaks tomorrow. So if you're planning to go, certainly try and sit in on at least one of her sessions. Wonderful researcher, devoted person, and very tech savvy, a person who truly is out there, who's truly out there, not just using things, but teaching people how to use things. And it's exciting to just sit in on her webinars, hear her present, and she has such a great spirit. And again, I think that if you haven't had a chance to hear her, by all means do so. Judy Russell, the legal genealogist, what a researcher. If you haven't heard her, you want to maybe perhaps want to listen to an archived version of Bernice Bennett's show. Judy Russell was a guest there. Oh my God, the information that she had about records that can be found on enslaved people who were in the courts and so many things that were there. Truly fascinating. I've had a chance to hear Jerry Smith talk about meets and bounds. I took the maps class at Samford University 2 years ago, and he was one of the as I call him, meets and bounds presenters in terms of how to really understand early land records. Fascinating, fascinating array of speakers. So check it out. It is the Fairfax Genealogical Society Spring Conference. Well, I'm also getting ready for some things. I'm getting ready to present an event coming up and hosted by the African American Genealogy Group of Philadelphia. That's coming up at the end of this month on the 27th of August. That's going to be, well, I call it an all-day event, not quite all the whole day, but from 9 to 3, there is going to be the annual genealogical event that is hosted by the African American Genealogy Group of Philadelphia. I will have the honor of being one of the speakers, Sharba, again. So for those of you up in Philadelphia, if you can't get down to see Shar tomorrow in Fairfax, well then by all means, you want to certainly hear her in Philadelphia. And again, even folks in New Jersey could come over to hear her there. That's the 27th of April at the Family History Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Among some of the speakers, there will be Sharba, Fallon Nicole Green, Shamel Jordan, Troy Messick, myself, David Lynch, Michael Haight, and Reginald Washington, who many of us know and have tremendous respect for because of his outstanding knowledge of records at the National Archives in Washington, where he has worked for the past 30 years. He just recently retired, but I'm so glad that he's going to be out there on the circuit speaking. We've missed you, Reginald, and I'm going to be thrilled to see you in Philadelphia. By the way, there's a very active African American special interest group coming out of Franklin County, Ohio. Well, they have a new website and they have some information to some of the things that they have been involved in. And this was just shared with me this past week in terms of individuals who are thinking about going to do some research in Columbus, going to the state capitol. They have also produced a new brochure on how to make the most of your trip, the most of your research when you're going to do some work in Columbus. And it's always exciting to see, for me, to see how people roll up their sleeves, get busy, provide resources, create finding aids for others. And it's just a neat thing to hear about there. So again, as I said, I'm putting a link for you, as I always do, on the podcast website to find out what's going on with the special interest group, the African American Special Interest Group. The San Antonio Public Library. This was also shared with me, and I was so happy to see this. Out of San Antonio, I believe that's Bexar County, they have on the public library site a wonderful database of African American funeral programs. You know, you hear various people who have a funeral program collection. And sometimes they may publish an index of sorts of maybe they'll have a list of who has been collected. And there are 300 or 400 names that you may see. Well, this is a site that has scanned over 1,000 funeral home funeral programs. And some of these programs go back to 1935. I've never seen a funeral program that old. The oldest one I believe I have in my possession is maybe from the 1960s when my great-grandmother passed away in 1961. But as far as at least a family funeral program is concerned. But here is a collection that goes back to the 1930s. And guess what? The images, as I said, have all been digitized. All you have to do, there's when you get to the page, and it's on texashistory.unt.edu, and I'll put a link there for you so you can take a look at it. Thumbnail images of the funeral programs appear on the site to the left. You only have to click it and it brings up the real image of the collection, I mean of the program. And what's exciting, not only do they load quickly, but if this was something that was not just a white, black and white colored funeral program, if it was blue, then that's what you see. In other words, these are colorized, these are color images of the actual funeral program. I think this is wonderful. You don't always see a collection such as this, and funeral programs are so important because for some people this may be the only thing where their name really appeared in print, where a paragraph was written about them. And here they did not even live to see that paragraph written about them. But it is something that I'm going to put a link to it. I think it's wonderful. It's part of a public library, as I said, of San Antonio, and this collection of African American funeral programs. I am thrilled to share that with you. By the way, do you have ancestors? Of course, I know many of you do have ancestors who served in the military. We often talk about those World War II and World War I fathers, grandfathers, in some cases, great-grandfathers who served in those two wars. And of course, many of us often seek those ancestors of ours who served in the Civil War. Well, apparently, many forget the Spanish-American War, but thankfully, there is now a call out, a national call for nominations of Buffalo soldiers' families. This is kind of interesting. This comes out of the United States Colored Troops Institute for Local History and Family Research, USCTI, at Hartwick College. And this is really an effort for communities to identify extended families of Buffalo soldiers. And of course, many people are never quite sure which regiments were the Buffalo soldiers. There were four regiments primarily, and these are regiments that were organized after the Civil War, and they served in the U.S. Army in the 9th and 10th Cavalry. Those were the mounted soldiers. And the 24th and 25th Infantry, those were the foot soldiers. Well, there is an effort to identify extended families of the Buffalo soldiers, and it's very, very interesting in terms of what they're hoping to do. They're hoping in the weekend in early November that they want to have this to be a part of the Harriet Tubman Buffalo Soldiers Student Conference. So it's a combination, and we know Harriet Tubman was Civil War, and so we're not confusing individuals in terms of time. It's just that this is a joint event. And this is going to take place at Hartwick College, and they are seeking individuals who are descendants of Buffalo soldiers to honor them at this event that's going to take place. And so there is this national call that's there. If you descend from, or you know others who descend from, individuals who served on the Western frontier, and of course later who served in the Spanish-American War as well. Well, if you would like to be a part of those families that are going to be honored as descendants of Buffalo soldiers, you have until September 14th of this year to submit nominations, and individuals who will be selected will be honored during the weekend of November 1st through the 3rd. I know I'm explaining it. It's kind of complicated the way it sounds, but that's the way it reads. But anyway, it sounds like it's really kind of interesting. What it is, they are combining events. They're combining the 100th anniversary of Harriet Tubman's death, which, by the way, this is the centennial year when she died. Many people don't realize that Harriet Tubman did live to the 20th century. She did die in 1913 in upstate New York. So this being the anniversary of her passing, and this also is the centennial of the 10th Cavalry in their 653-mile march from Vermont to Winchester, Virginia. Many people have never even heard of that, but this is something that's amazing. The 10th Cavalry participated in a march from Fort Ethan Allen, Vermont to Winchester, Virginia. It took about 2 weeks for them to complete this from, it was in June, And this was 1913, and it's a little bit of history that people don't always understand. But one of the things that happened, which is probably a reason why this is taking place, this entire event, that halfway through their journey, this particular regiment, the 10th Cavalry, these are mounted soldiers now, they actually camped in Oneonta, New York. This is also in the area where the campus of Hartwick College is, where this conference is taking place. And apparently, people had heard about these soldiers. They had attracted so many people, about 3,000 spectators came to observe these men who had served nobly on the Western frontier, had served also nobly in the Spanish-American War, in Cuba, later in the Philippines, and apparently 3,000 people came to honor them and to observe them when they camped in that local area in Oneonta as they were passing through in June of 1913. So, as they're honoring the centennial of Harriet Tubman's death, and they're marking the centennial of the 10th Cavalry on their historic march and camping in that local area near their campus, they have combined things, events, and as an effort to also commemorate those who descend from individuals, the call for submissions for descendants of soldiers who were with the Buffalo Soldiers has been put out because they want to honor the families of those men as well. Fascinating. But you know what? I love any aspect, even an event like this, because it shows an interest in community history. It shows an interest in a certain degree of pride in terms of what has happened in one's community. And this is what I hope we are doing. We're documenting those unique stories where we live, and we're able to really just make a commitment to seeing that story unfold. I have had, as a result, which is a good segue into my latest adventure, last week I was just doing what I always do, looking online, looking at a database, looking at some old newspapers, just to see anything interesting, any interesting tidbits that would be worth pursuing. Well, a story jumped off the pages about a small facility that used to exist in my hometown. Apparently, a woman was concerned. This is the heart of the Depression, 1936, and a woman was concerned that many children were perhaps passing away at birth. Many children were dying. Innocent babies were dying. And this woman was very interested in establishing a facility where babies could be born in a clean environment, in a sterile environment. So a maternity, well, it was actually called, I started to say home, but it was called a maternity ward. And what jumped off at me was, number one, here was a story about a facility that was a little bit ahead of its time. You know how you hear today of birthing centers when women who want to have an alternative to what we now call traditional hospital stay? Well, there are these birthing centers. However, this is a little bit different. This was a facility that was created to provide a clean, sterile place where women could give birth. Well, this happened in my hometown. And that story in itself is not that unusual, but the way it was presented did catch my attention. And it said 17 babies saved in Fort Smith, Arkansas by maternity club. Well, first of all, I didn't know what a maternity club was. Well, it really was locally known as a maternity ward. However, and not a club. But what caught my attention, I guess, beyond that, was the fact that here was a lovely photograph of eight babies, eight cute little black babies on a little quilt, and all sort of looking quizzically at this camera as it was snapping their pictures. The picture appeared in the Chicago Defender, an historically black newspaper. And it talked about the maternity home. It talked about the founder, Mrs. Beatrice Robertson of Fort Smith. And it talked about the fact that only one child had actually died, who was born in the home, and or who had been treated at the home in some kind of capacity. And that was the child who actually had been, I guess, in very unhealthy or unsanitary conditions. Well, anyway, the article celebrated the fact that, you know, these lives were saved, these children were healthy, and it just caught my attention because, as a person who's familiar with the history of my hometown, Fort Smith, I had never heard of this maternity ward. And so I blogged about it. And when I blogged about it, I then put a link to the story on Facebook and on Twitter. Well, it's been amazing. The response has been overwhelming. I put it first in a general area, and then I put it in two Facebook groups that I belong to. One was called Growing Up in Fort Smith, and the other, Fort Smith is my hometown. And the other group in which I placed the link to my blog was a group called If You Ever Lived in Fort Smith. And ironically, well, people grew up in different worlds. And up until the 1960s and 70s, there was not an integrated existence. The town was black and the town was white. And for many years, that is the way people lived. And as a result, the two groups have different memories and a different cultural base. So I belong to both groups. And there are others who also belong to both groups as well. But growing up in Fort Smith is the black group, I'll say. And If You Ever group is largely white, although certainly, you know, it's not excluding anyone by any means. But my point is that I put a link to the story in both of those groups. And since then, the response has been amazing. I have had individuals who are like, wow, I've never heard of this. What is this? Oh my goodness. So that part in both groups was just sort of a jaw-dropping, oh my goodness, what interesting history. But the second part of the history, one of my genealogy colleagues wrote me a response and said, well, it looks as if some Jewish people helped build the maternity home. Maybe you can follow up on that. She sent me a link to a book. And the book was about actually the influence that Jewish people who lived in the South, how they were contributors in the cause for civil rights. And there was a small paragraph about a Mrs. Weinberger who lived in the city, who was very active with the YWCA, and who had also helped to establish a children's nursery for the black population. Well, that rang a bell because in the article about the 17 babies, one of their plans was to expand and to offer a day nursery where women could leave their children, a daycare facility, could leave their children there for 10 cents a day on North Division Street. Well, again, what an amazing story. I was able to put two and two together and realize that Mrs. Robertson, who was the founder of the maternity ward, had to have known Mrs. Weinberger, the Jewish lady, who influenced the nursery that Mrs. Robertson ran. Well, it also became obvious that they interacted because both women were very active in the YWCA. And I've been thrilled because now I've had people from the Jewish community writing me, and I've had people from a local magazine, Entertainment Fort Smith, who've asked me if I'd be willing to write an article about this facility, the maternity home. And the response just continues to grow. I hope I will be able to make the deadline to write that article because it's one of those stories that needs to be told. And it's a fascinating story. And I've just been so amazed And how just a little bit of curiosity, looking for something interesting from my hometown or about my hometown, led to this amazing adventure. There's a lesson there. Yes, there's a lesson to keep looking, to keep being curious, to keep, or when you find that interesting article, keep that curiosity alive by just going to look and see something even just a wee bit further. Doing that and then writing a little piece about it. Hey, I found this really unique place. Has anybody ever heard of it? So far, nobody's heard of it, at least among the people who have responded to me. But of course, they wouldn't. They're my generation. They wouldn't know about what happened in 1936. If there are any people who remember, many people who would remember are probably deceased. And in fact, the 17 babies, or the 8 babies on the quilt in the wonderful picture, even they are elders now. So I hope that someone will be able to find someone who would remember this, remember Mrs. Robertson and what she did for the community. But the greater lesson is this is a community story, and it's one of those stories that gets people fired up, that gets people excited about things. And it's a beautiful story. And so many things that we do when we find an unusual record set that, again, generates an opportunity to tell another chapter, we've got to do that. We've got to make a commitment to do that. I guess one of the things that's going through my mind, and whoops, it's a reminder for me to also mention that if you have no other reason, it is important to understand that we have such we are, I guess, embarking on an incredible journey, and one to which we have to commit ourselves. And I thought about this after listening last night, by the way, to Bernice Bennett's guest on the Bernice Bennett Show, Research at the National Archives and Beyond. Her guest last night was J. Mark Lowe. If you don't know J. Mark Lowe and what he does, you need to become familiar with him. Just Google his name or watch some old reruns of Who Do You Think You Are or African American Lives. The episode or episodes that depicted individuals who had ties to Tennessee included Mark Lowe. Mark was there on those episodes, on the episode with Vanessa Williams, on the episode with Lionel Richie. And once you hear him and realize how experienced a researcher he is, you know why. You know why he was selected. What a tremendous resource and what a national treasure this man is, or certainly a research treasure that he is. Last night he talked about, which was a fascinating topic, particularly because it's a topic that most of us have never been exposed to. And I think just that fact that most of us have never heard of this, it just amazed me because he's speaking matter factly about a record set that most of us had never ever heard about. And I'm talking about the records of dour slaves. And that's a word, a term I was unfamiliar with. Dour slaves or dour records and or dour property, not to be confused with dowry, which a woman may bring certain assets into a marriage. No, this pertains to property inherited by I'll say inherited or willed to a widow after her husband has passed away, property that she may use and enjoy and to use to her advantage during her lifetime, but upon her death, that property is to then be sold or be given to others or divided among others. Well, this particular episode was on dower slaves and administrative court action. What a wonderful, wonderful show this was for so many reasons. The information was amazing in and of itself. The information was, I guess, enlightening and was amazing to me because I guess the fact that so many of us experienced researchers were unfamiliar with dower slave records, were also unfamiliar to records of road crews. And I just said, wow, my goodness. And all of this, which would be so enlightening in terms of whatever aspect of research that you're engaged in. And I guess, as we proceed to conduct our research and realize, wow, here's a unique set of records that if a woman had been willed these slaves or this property, as slaves were, in 1840, let's say, slaves were not freed until the 1860s, depending upon where they were. In some cases during the war, many did free themselves, but others who remained enslaved until freedom was really sort of demanded. But that aside, here is an opportunity to find a set of records that gave a year-by-year listing of enslaved people in a certain community with a certain owner to whom they worked to remain until her death, and then the estate could be divided. Wow, this was so amazing. What a unique chapter, what a unique aspect of county history this can be. And going back to what I was just saying about researching the community and researching those stories, those things that really tell us what our ancestors were doing. My goodness, this is what we do, and we have to take it seriously. And as it was said, no greater task. We have no greater task than this, no nobler task. And I was quite moved, actually, when I listened to that show and when I heard him speak those words, no greater, no nobler task that we have than to do this. And this made me really pause and realize, it's not about my grandpa, it's not about your grandpa, it's not about our own single individual line, our own single individual pedigree. It's beyond that. And when we really start to capture the stories of what happened to people and to understand that we're really embarked on something that is so incredible and so important. Listen to her show. You know her show airs every Thursday night at 9 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. Last night's show was wonderful. J. Mark Lowe, as I said, was the guest. I learned so much, and I was reminded of so much. And what just a moving, moving, moving experience it was to really hear that. We're about telling the story, and it is so important that, and when I thought about when I found the story of the 18 babies, that I had to tell this story and let the town know. And word has spread through the town. Whoa, here's an interesting chapter in our history we didn't know. And this is recent history, 1930s. But here's something, this little snippet of history that I was able to share with the community. And people are asking questions now, and they're talking to each other now. And I realized, wow, when I began to see the reaction that I was getting from individuals and hearing from complete strangers, hi, would you write this piece for us? This is such an incredible story. One lady who lives in Missouri, I follow her on Twitter. She replied to me on both Twitter and on Facebook. Facebook, she's able to type more words. You're limited to 140 characters on Twitter. But she wrote to me and said, I don't know why this story has moved me so much, but it has. And this is an elderly lady who lives in Missouri, and but she was so touched by reading the story of this little maternity ward that was started by this lady who just wanted to see that babies were born in a clean place and a safe place. And I realized, yeah, this is correct. This is correct that I'm telling the story. This is correct that Mark was there to encourage people to study the communities, to pull out those forgotten and underused records of dour slaves, these underused records of road crews that so many of us have never heard of that existed. And we realize that there is an amazing task that we have. It is an awesome task that we have to do to tell that story, and we can't take it lightly. There's so much ahead of us. Anyway, I'm going to stop there. You know I tend to go on sometimes, but I just felt so inspired after listening to that show last night. It was just great. Anyway, I hope that some of you will have a great time tomorrow at the Fairfax Genealogical Society meeting. Also, a special shout out to those in Baltimore going to the Baltimore chapter, Agnes Kane Callum chapter of the Afro-American Historical and Genealogical Society. By the way, there is still time to enroll in Maggie, the Midwestern African-American Genealogical Institute. And I'm going to put out a word out there and just say, you know what? We need more teachers. We need teachers. We need instructors. And we need professionals to help others find their families. How many of you have really thought about embracing the fact if you've helped a friend, you've helped somebody in the family, you helped someone put together some data on someone's life in preparation for a family reunion, or have worked on a funeral program and incorporated a little family history there when you were preparing that document? Have you ever thought of really becoming a professional African-American genealogist, making that a specialty? Well, you know what? You may want to take a close look at the professional track at Maggie. This is an opportunity to learn how you can write your story, to learn how you can share your talent. You know, professional doesn't always mean that you're doing research for some lone individual client. That's one tiny part of being a professional researcher. And there are aspects of our culture and experience that would be worth sharing in terms of sharing with the persons for whom you're doing research or the audience that you are teaching. Think about it. There's some wonderful tracks at Maggie. Professional genealogy is one of five fabulous tracks that are going to be offered. Take a look at the Institute website, and I hope to meet you in St. Louis as well. Anyway, I'm going to stop talking. I tend to go on. Listen, I appreciate you for being there. Thank you for doing what you do, and continue to do what you do, because we have no nobler task. Thanks so much. Keep doing what you always do. Keep researching, keep documenting, and always, please, keep sharing what you find. Take care, everyone. Have a great week. Be well and be safe. And I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.